Have you ever wanted to prove that there's a better way to do business?
At the highest level, we were really passionate about what we were going to do, but we were also really passionate about how we were going to do it.
That's Blake Jones, co-founder and former CEO of Namaste Solar. Blake began his career in the oil and gas industry. Then in 2004, he founded Namaste Solar to transform both the energy industry and business itself. Blake was determined to build a company largely based on democratic principles that practices conscientious business and has a positive impact on its employees, customers, community, investors, and the environment and beyond. As a certified B Corp, Namaste Solar is an employee-owned cooperative that runs its business as a force for good. In our conversation, Blake shares the key leadership and cultural tenets that have sustained Namaste Solar over the years, as well as what's changed and evolved as the company has grown and scaled.
You can't be a leader if nobody wants to follow you. You've got to be able to inspire folks. You've got to be able to empower them, to encourage them.
I'm Merrill MacDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. And now, Blake Jones. I'm here with Blake Jones, co-founder and former CEO of Namaste Solar. Hi, Blake. I'm so glad to have you.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Your career tells quite a story. You started first in the oil and gas industry, then pivoted to found and lead a solar company that revolutionized both energy and business. What guiding principles did you use when forming Namaste?
Yeah, I think at the highest level, we were really passionate about what we were going to do, solar energy work. But we were also really passionate about how we were going to do it. We wanted to do things in a different way. We wanted to prove that there was a better way to do business than the conventional norm. And to us, there were quirky ideas. They were kind of experimental ideas, but we were really excited about being employee owned. We wanted every employee who joined to be able to become an owner. And there were three of us who founded the company. And I want to say by the time we were 20 people, the three of us no longer had a majority stake in the company. And that was by design. So we really wanted to share ownership and be an employee-owned company. We also wanted to be what we called a democratic workplace. And most people, when they think of democracy, they think of voting. But I think being a democratic workplace is about more than just voting on one person, one vote basis, which is what we've always done. For example, an important democratic principle is transparency. We are transparent with all of our company information, including our pay information. So everybody's always known each other's wage and salary levels since the beginning. We think that you can be a better employee owner when you're a fully informed employee owner. You know what's going on. You know how your individual day-to-day job role fits in with the larger big picture. So transparency was a really important principle to us. And I'd say another one was check and balance. That's an important democratic principle. Making sure that, you know, I as a founding CEO wasn't just a command and control single person who controlled everything. We didn't want to be a dictatorship. We wanted to be a democracy. And having checks and balances in the form of a healthy board of directors that's separate, that the CEO does not serve on. The board of directors is voted in by the employee owners as opposed to a small number of stockholders, which oftentimes in a closely held company can be the CEO and the founders. Those are some examples of principles that were important to us when we started the company.
You founded the company as a B Corp, is that correct?
That's right. Well, I'd say we founded it in the spirit of being a B Corp. B Corp certification didn't come out until many years after we started. But when we saw it, we thought, oh, that's us. That's exactly what we're trying to be. To me, what being a B Corp means is two things at the core. The first one is that your reason for existence isn't just to maximize profit for stockholders. And the second one is that you try to benefit all of your stakeholders, and not just the stockholders, but also your employees, the community, the environment, and so on. And when we started the company, we put it into the DNA of our company that we wanted our board of directors to be considering impacts on all stakeholders when they made their decisions. And later when B Corp came out, that was a requirement. In order to become a B Corp, you had to put that into the DNA of your company, into the articles of incorporation, some very similar language. So I'd say we started in the spirit of a B Corp, but the certification didn't yet exist.
I think that's a really good point. And I realized it as I was asking the question that you were, in that sense, way ahead of your time.
Maybe. I'd like to think some of it we stumbled upon by accident. Some of it also, we were fortunate there were some, we found some role models that inspired us and that gave us good ideas to emulate.
So Blake, one of the things you mentioned is that you have a policy of one person, one vote. And that just led me to really think about the question, how do you make decisions as a company?
In a lot of ways, we make decisions just like any other company. Our individuals are empowered with a certain amount of authority to make certain decisions. We call them team leads, or our managers are empowered, our CEO is empowered. But at the end of the day, our employee owners are the stockholders. They're the ones who determine who's on the board of directors. The board of directors determines who the CEO is. And a lot of things can look conventional in that sense, but who ultimately, where the buck stops, who's got the ultimate control, who the stockholders are, is incredibly important. And I've learned that firsthand through 15 years at Namaste Solar, that when it's not just a small number of people owning the vast majority of the stock and determining who's on the board, amazing things can happen when you distribute that ownership. And to take another step back to answer how we make decisions, we have what's called a decision zone chart, or you could call it a decision-making matrix. We learned about this from a company called Ownership Associates, and a lot of other employee-owned companies have decision zone charts, but we've got one and we keep it updated, and it is incredibly helpful for any kind of company, not just employee-owned companies. And it's really helpful, especially for new people, but it's something that we reference regularly, that we have to update regularly, but it says where are different decisions made and by who. You know, for example, you know, our salespeople can give a discount of a certain amount, but if they want to give a discount that's higher than that, who makes that decision? Maybe it's the sales manager, maybe it's the CEO of a small company. Who makes that decision is important for people to know. And we've got, I'd say, 7 levels of decision making, individual level being one end of the spectrum and the other end of the spectrum being the stockholders. But it's clear we want people to know how our decisions are made and who's going to make them. So when we vote on things, we do vote on a one-person, one-vote basis, but our decision zone chart says what are the types of things that we vote on. And as stockholders, it's the normal things that stockholders of a corporation vote on. First and foremost, whether or not to sell the company, and we've had multiple votes on that in our 15-year history, and it's who the board of directors are going to be. Those are the main things that stockholders vote on. And then you've got things that the board of directors vote on, and those are normal board things, like who the CEO is, CEO compensation, it's dividend declarations, it's, you know, budget and strategic plans and things like that. And then we've got, you know, here's what kind of empowerment the CEO has. And our CEO has what we call conventional CEO empowerment. But as I mentioned earlier, as a democracy, there's also some checks and balances on that CEO's empowerment. One is that the CEO can't be on the board of directors, that the board of directors can overrule something that the CEO does. And also, our employee owners can vote to overturn something that the CEO wants to do. So the CEO can't be a command and control dictator. The CEO's really got to have leadership skills in addition to management skills in order to successfully lead our company where we're trying to go.
Wow. And of course, you were CEO for a dozen years, from like 2004 to 2016. What was that like, being a CEO in a company such as this compared to the typical CEO role you may have had?
I think that I would not make a good manager at a conventional company. I just don't think my management skill set is that strong. But I think I've got decent leadership skills. And I think that, you know, when you look at any management position, it requires some combination of management skills and leadership skills. To be CEO at Namaste Solar, you've got to have very strong leadership skills. And what I consider the difference is that I think leadership skills require more of the ability to inspire. You can't be a leader if nobody wants to follow you. You've got to be able to inspire folks. You've got to be able to empower them, to encourage them. You've got to do a lot of facilitation. A lot of what I did would be to draw out the good ideas from the collective wisdom of our entire company and kind of crystallize them into a vision or into a plan. Whereas I think a manager has a lot more control. Sometimes it's just entitled authority to tell people what to do. And the reason why they're doing it is because the boss told them to. I had to usually convince people that the idea that I had was a good one, Or if my idea wasn't good, I had to listen to my colleagues for why they thought they had a better idea. And then I had to amend my original idea to include the good things that they were bringing to the table and come up with something better and try to bring people along on the journey, which is a term we use regularly at Namaste Solar, bring people along on the journey for here's why I came up with this plan, or here's why I came up with this idea, or here's why I want to make this decision, but also do a really good job of listening, because sometimes I don't have the best idea, or the executive team doesn't have the best idea. And when you check in with everyone else, you end up getting amendments to the original idea that make it ultimately better. So I think being CEO of Namaste Solar was a wonderful learning experience. It was humbling, because ultimately what happened was I kind of got outvoted too often, such that I needed to step down as CEO because I was wanting to lead the company in a direction that the employee owners, that was different than where the employee owners wanted to take it. And on one hand, you know, I had friends who were saying, like, wait a minute, you're the founder of this company, and because your fellow employee owners want to take it in a different direction, you're stepping down and you're not even going to be chair of the board or something like that, what a normal founder would do. On one hand, it was embarrassing a little bit in that sense. But on the other hand, I couldn't have been more proud that the company that we started and that we co-created together to be democratic in this way, that it had the courage to tell me, you know, a founding CEO, that it wanted to go in a different direction. And I think it was a beautiful outcome that democratically they decided they wanted to do that, and that I was still able to stay at the company and support it and going in a different direction, but to be able to step down as CEO.
So tell me about that. So you said it was embarrassing, humbling, but also made you very proud, which I can imagine. And I would think as listeners are listening to this, they're very curious too. You went from being CEO to, it sounds like you're still with the company, but in a different role. How did that work? And how did you wrap your head around that?
It was a long process, and I did it with my partners, you know, with my fellow employee owners, having lots of discussions about it, especially with our board of directors at the time. And it was a multi-year process, decision-making process. It's tough. Anyone who's started a company or has been a CEO for a long time, it's a tough decision whether or not to change directions or to consider stepping down. And it was for me as well. But after having all those conversations and having it be clear that there was just some misalignment on the future direction for the company that I wanted to take it in versus the majority of employee owners wanted to take it in, I think I knew the best thing for me to do would be to not quite get out of the way. I think a lot of founders that I interviewed described it that way, you know, want to get out of their own way so that the company can go on and be something better and greater than it could with a founder still at the helm, you know, sometimes because the founder recognizes their own limitations, or that the company needs a new skill set to continue on that founder doesn't have. I'd say some of that was in play with me, but yeah, it was a lot of soul searching. It was a lot of talking with people to be sounding boards and advisors, and just a lot of healthy, tough conversations with fellow employee owners about what we wanted for our company. But you know, like most things, when you start a company, when you run a company, it's a cocktail of a lot of different ingredients. You know, the good and the bad, the humble pie also with the, you know, with feeling proud all at the same time, kind of like being a parent. It's a complex cocktail, but it's a beautiful one, and I've personally grown a lot, and am a better person for having been at Namaste Solar all these years.
And what are you doing for the company now?
So I am still at the company, which I'm grateful for. I'm not serving on the board. I thought that was an important thing for a founding CEO, not to be on the board, because it can, you know, if sometimes a succeeding CEO, and I interviewed a lot of CEOs that succeeded founders, it can be tough. If the founder is there in the room, people watch the body language, people still look towards the founder. I didn't want to, you know, cast a shadow or accidentally step on the new CEO's toes. So I kind of took myself out of the room where it happens, so to speak, by not being on the board, not being on the executive committee anymore, but am there to handle special projects, to, you know, investor relations, do business development, and ultimately support the new CEO however I can when that new CEO approaches me to ask for help, as opposed to going up and checking in on the CEO too often so that the CEO is thinking, hey, this founder is looking over my shoulders all the time. I don't want the new CEO to to feel like that. But it's been great so far. And I stepped down, what is it, a little over 3 years ago, and it's been going well.
I would imagine that a lot of your success, and now your successor's success, is based on very constant and continuous communication. And what kind of things do you do to bring people along on the journey, and how do you keep them engaged and really help them see what you see so that you can all make the best decision?
I think communicating in a lot of different ways, having a lot of different forums, you know, so that's in small group meetings, it's in all company meetings, it's one-on-one conversations, giving and receiving feedback in a lot of different ways. But it's not always just, hey, the CEO knows best and I'm just trying to convince people, this is the idea we're going to do. And how do you communicate that to them? How do you convince them? It's also making sure that that's a two-way street. There have been plenty of times where I thought I had the best decision, but then fortunately I had an open enough mind and open enough ears to hear from others and went and sought that feedback and they were able to give it, that I realized, hey, wait a minute, I think actually my colleagues have a better idea. And I think a CEO, a good leader, needs to be able to listen just as much as they need to be able to talk and convince, because, you know, one of the things we say at NAMSE Solar is no one of us is as smart as all of us. And I truly believe that. And I love that aspect about our culture and that over our 15-year history, that has definitely rung true. So I think there's so many different ways in which communication can happen, because, you know, some people are shy to speak up in a big group, for example, but they've got something really fantastic to offer. So you want to provide different forums and different ways for having those multi-directional communications happen. And the better a job you can do that, it increases the chances that you're going to come up with the best ideas, implement the best ideas, and have everybody be on the same page, which is incredibly important as a company.
And I know you had a really huge growth spurt between 2008 and 2012. And I'm not sure, how many employees do you have now?
We're just over 200.
So 200, and you talked a lot about listening. There must be a mechanism by which you're able to bring forward all these ideas, or I'm sure there's a lot of thinking about bringing the outside in. How do you do that?
Yep, it's tough. There's no easy answer. I think there's a playbook, but it doesn't work every time. You kind of need to call different plays in different situations, and sometimes a certain play is going to work, and other times another play is going to work better. But it's just having a lot of plays in that playbook, having a lot of tools in your tool belt to be able to choose from, and trying constantly experimenting and trying an all the above strategy is important. Like right now, we've got someone who focuses on communications, like facilitating communications amongst our co-owners, and she's doing a fantastic job. And a lot of it is her seeking feedback, like what would be the best way for you all to receive this information or for you all to weigh in on this. And different teams, you know, we have a lot of electricians, we have a lot of people who work out in the field, we have a lot of salespeople and marketing folks who work in the office, and they're just very different work environments for different job roles. And the folks who are out in the field all the time aren't in front of their computer, aren't able to utilize Microsoft Teams to do, you know, regular chats on and chime in on our, you know, internal bulletin board on certain issues because they're out in the field the whole time. So we have to come up with different communication strategies and engagement strategies for different job roles that we have. And so her role is a tough one, but it's constantly trying to seek feedback. What's the best way that you would like to engage in this or to learn about this? And then experimenting with, all right, here's five different ways, and we hope that you're going to be able to utilize two or three of these. But the more engagement that there is, the more feedback that can flow in both directions, the better that our employee owners are informed about what we're doing and what our strategy is and what's happening at the big picture level, the better that we perform. So yes, good communication throughout the entire company takes a lot of time, especially when you're a bigger company, but we found that you get a huge return on that investment.
What are some of the ideas that you've found to be particularly useful? And I ask this because I know a lot of our listeners are always trying to figure out some of the same challenges, particularly with field people.
You know, I think one, I was having a conversation with a colleague about when I was CEO, the board of directors actually gave me this direction, this guidance. They said, you need to go and work with each and every crew, because we install solar panels. Sometimes on the rooftops of homes, sometimes on the rooftops of office buildings, sometimes, you know, big fields of solar farms. And they said, you need to go out and spend a day with each crew each year, once per year. And it was something that wasn't urgent, so it would be on my to-do list, but it was an easy thing to procrastinate on. But I found that while it was hard to take the time to do that, it was incredibly effective for me to go and spend a day with each crew out in the field, you know, meeting on their turf, so to speak, on their terms, because I would get to walk a mile in their shoes and be on the project that they were on, and remember that being an installer and being an electrician can be tough when it's 110 degrees up on a rooftop in the middle of summer, or when it's freezing cold in the middle of winter. But B, it just allowed us for a good amount of time to interact and build trust and connect as humans while we're working side by side. And then great conversations would happen when you're working side by side, and great conversations would happen during our lunch break. And I would get so much valuable feedback, so many valuable perspectives from them. And I think they got a chance to hear some of that too. You know, like, hey, we're having lunch with the CEO. I can ask whatever question I want. This is great. I think it was mutually beneficial. It doesn't sound like a profoundly amazing idea, but I think a lot of CEOs, you know, the thought of taking the time to do that, because the CEO doesn't have much time. You constantly have to prioritize what you're doing throughout the entire year because there's so many important things to focus on. But to take the time to do that, I always found that, again, I got great return on that, on the time that I invested in doing that. And I also got a level of communication, a type of communication that wouldn't have been possible otherwise in a larger group meeting.
Yeah, I remember many years ago, I was on the executive committee of a truck and engine company, and we had been talking a lot about bringing people along on the journey. And we started a program where each of us were going out to our manufacturing plants. Mm-hmm. We had started it with the intent of going out to make sure that people knew what we were doing, what we were thinking, what was going on. And what we realized the outcome was is we learned so much, and we shifted a lot of what we thought we were going to do.
Yep.
It was really mind-blowing how, in some ways, we were really out of touch with what was happening on the plant floor.
And I think that's a wonderful thing for managers, for CEOs to recognize. They don't always have the best ideas. They're going to come up with better ideas when they tap into the collective brain trust of the entire company, and when they listen just as much as they talk.
Yeah. So you started as a very small company, and then, as we mentioned earlier, you went through a period of intense growth. But what challenges did you encounter? Or, you know, a lot of people see growth as big a challenge as just maintaining your operations.
I would agree. We've been through some steep growth curves at different times throughout our company's history. And yeah, in those early years, I think we ended up being, you know, number 56 or whatever it was on the Inc. 500 list, because we just had super fast growth from zero to 25 million in revenue. And growth, it's like most things, it's got its pros and its cons. Growth can be incredibly exciting and exhilarating and fun. And there's a lot of individual career development opportunities because there are new roles opening up, you know, promotional opportunities, so to speak, or you're starting new business units, or you're expanding. And so it's fun when you're a part of that growth because you're learning so much and you're getting to do some neat things. But it's also got its downsides. I think it's very difficult to intentionally curate and design and architect a culture when you're growing that fast. It's tough to create policies that are good ones that keep up with that growth. It's tough to maintain a good qualitative level of safety and quality and customer service. You know, the faster you're growing, usually the more balls that you drop. You're also burning a lot of cash, and the faster your top line is growing, usually you're making sacrifices to your bottom line, and those pressures bring with them a lot of different things. So it's, you know, my preference is slower growth because I'm a quality over quantity kind of guy. And yes, there are good reasons for growth. And a lot of our employee owners would say, we want to install more solar panels so we can have a greater quantitative impact on the environment. And we want to bring in more employee owners so that, you know, we can quantitatively share this employee ownership experience with a larger number of people. And those are valid reasons to want to grow. But then there's also the qualitative side of things. And I've just tended to gravitate more towards that. I want the qualitative impact that our company has on the solar industry. I thought that was more important than the quantitative. The qualitative impact on each of our stakeholders' experience and being, you know, our employee owners being at Namaste Solar. I wanted us to have a higher quality culture, higher quality safety, higher quality customer service, higher quality everything. And usually you can maintain that better when growth curves are slower. But growth is an interesting one, because also when you slow down, you're not hiring as much. We've tended to attract very ambitious people who were curious and wanted to learn and do new things quickly. And when you're not growing as quickly, sometimes they can't find the next place for them, or they can't climb the rung in the ladder. They can't see what it's going to be in your company. So we've lost some good people that way. And fortunately, they went on to find what they were looking for somewhere else, and we're happy for them. But that is a downside of when you slow down. Another downside is after you're done with that fast growth, usually there's what we call a hangover. It's tough to go from the exhilarating fun days of fast growth to then the hangover when the party's over and you realize all the gaps in safety and quality and customer service and culture that were created, and there's no longer that exhilaration that's fueling company morale, and you've got to change speeds, and it's tough to downshift.
Where is the company now in its growth curve?
Well, as we talk, we are in the middle of the COVID crisis.
Yes. So yes.
It is it's a tough time for everyone, and small businesses like ours. Yeah, we just had some layoffs, which were incredibly painful.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Especially so at an employee-owned company. Yep. And have furloughed some folks. So, you know, right before COVID, we were growing at a manageable pace, where it was kind of breakneck in the previous 4 years. COVID, we didn't see it coming, like many people didn't, and things are still in flux. But I would say that our employee owners intentionally chose to slow down our rate of growth in the last 2 years. And actually last year, you know, we kind of had the mantra of better, not bigger. And we were trying to focus on more toward the qualitative end of the spectrum instead of the quantitative. And I think that was good for us. It really helped us to catch our breath. It helped us to make sure we had the right people on the bus in the right seats. It made sure that, you know, we could focus on our culture, which is one of our biggest strengths. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with COVID in general, what impact it has on us. But usually in Namaste Solar's history, we have tended to emerge from crises or from downturns or from tough times stronger, with more solidarity and with a reaffirmed commitment to our mission and our culture and the kind of company that we want to be. So I'm confident that's going to happen on the other end of this COVID crisis too.
Well, thank goodness you have such a strong culture, right? Because that's what's going to pull a lot of companies through this, I think.
Yes. I'm a, you know, that adage of culture eats strategy for breakfast. I'm a big believer in that. Culture has been one of our biggest assets, and one of our most, the secrets to our success has ultimately been our culture and the people that have co-created it and curated it.
You know, obviously we've touched on a lot of things that have described your culture, but is there anything else that you can share in terms of really what your culture is? What kind of people are most successful at Namaste?
I think they're the kind that believe in teamwork and that collaboration, and they're ones who aren't afraid to speak up, you know, and engage. Like a democracy is only strong when people inform themselves and they engage and they speak up. And that's definitely true at our company. We one of our core values is the acronym FOH, which stands for Frank, Open, and Honest Communication. On one hand, it sounds easy, but on the other hand, it's not. You know, we've never been 100% FOH all the time, but we strive for it. And when we're more FOH with each other, better things happen. But it's tough. And in a very transparent culture like ours, where everyone knows each other's pay, for example, you've got to nip problems in the bud and talk about them before they fester. You know, we don't like the parking lot conversations and the water cooler conversations. We like to get things out in the open and talk about them. But it can be taxing, and it can be awkward and uncomfortable to talk about things out in the open and confront them head on, when sometimes it's easier to sweep them under the rug and move on, especially at the workplace. People who are more willing to work on that tend to be happier and appreciate it in our culture. Another one of our core values is distributed leadership. You know, we believe we don't want to be a command and control company. We don't want to be a top-down hierarchy. We like it to be as decentralized and distributed of leadership as possible. And I think our company has done well as a result. There's a fun story I like to tell, just about how, you know, when people hear about our culture, they say, well, wow, it sounds like you have to do so much communication, and there's transparency, and you've got to have all these conversations out in the open. You got to bring people along for the journey, and all these things have to happen. Your decision-making process must take a really long time. And the answer is yes, our decision-making process does take longer than at a conventional company, but the time it takes us to implement a decision is significantly faster. And when you combine the decision-making phase plus the implementation phase, both of those combined, I think, are shorter. It's shorter than at a conventional company where you can make a decision really quickly, but it takes a long time to properly implement it. I remember reading this article. I don't have an MBA. I don't have a business management background. And I used to read Inc. magazine and Entrepreneur magazine and Harvard Business Review every chance I got. And I remember reading an article in Harvard Business Review about change management. And I was like, I don't even know what that term means. What is change management? And the article is basically saying, okay, you and your executive team have made a decision. Now, you know, you want to go in a different direction, and you want to open a new business unit, you're going to do things in a different way. Change management is all about how do you get the rest of the company to go along with it? And it talked about all these different strategies you can have. And, you know, you can describe the background and explain the context. You can have town hall meetings and do Q&A, and you can, you know, you got to look for the people who are going to sandbag and sabotage it. And you got to, you know, you got to get them out of there. You know, give all these different strategies. And after I read that article, I thought about it. I said, oh, this is fascinating. I think at Namaste Solar, we just put the cart before the horse. We do all those things first as part of our decision-making process. You know, we make sure everybody understands the big picture context and the background. You know, here's why we need to contemplate a different direction. Okay, let's come up with ideas. And we all brainstorm together. Or maybe, you know, the CEO, me as CEO, might say, well, here's the vision I'm starting with. Go ahead and redline it and edit it and, you know, and add whatever you think to it. And usually there'd be lots of fantastic ideas to it, or we'd scrap it all together and start with somebody else's idea. And everyone would have their voice heard. We'd go through that process. It took us a really long time. But then when we were ready to make a decision, we could immediately implement it, go in that direction, and everybody would be paddling their butts off in that direction that we all decided in, even if somebody didn't get their way, because of the process, because they were brought along in the journey, because they learned the context and the background why, because they had, you know, their voice was heard, they were able to try to advocate for a different alternative, but not everybody agreed with it. Even the folks who didn't get their way would still be paddling their butt off in the direction that we decided to go in. And it was a beautiful thing. So I think just that bigger picture, more holistic thinking of, it's not just about the time that it takes to make a decision. It's also how long it takes to implement and what's going to be the impact on your culture as a result of the way that you make those decisions and how you build trust and how you engage people and how they feel valued and listened to, and ultimately determines how much they're going to care about their job roles and about the company and ultimately how successful you are. So they're all interconnected.
Yeah, I often think about companies always say, well, no one likes change. Nobody is interested in change. But then when you think about it, human beings elect change all the time. We get married, we buy a house, we have a baby. Those are big changes. But we don't like someone else telling us what we need to do to change, right? So being part of that process, as you describe, is a whole different way of creating a movement.
I think that's exactly right. I think that's insightful, because when you know, what helps with change is when you can talk about it with other people and you can process it and digest it, you know, with others. What helps is when you can influence it and you feel like you have some control over it and you have some agency and ability to decide on it. Those things can make a world of difference. Whereas if a change is imposed on you and you don't understand the background, you don't understand the reason why, and you're told to do it right away, you know, the executive team may have been talking about it for months or they may have seen it developing, but if a rank and file employee is not aware of that and they're just told, you've got to make this, you know, our company's making this enormous change right away and you need to step in line or get out, that's tough. You know, that would be really difficult for anybody to have to go through change that way. So yeah, I would agree.
And Blake, this has just been so incredibly interesting. I really appreciate you joining us. I have one last question, which is, as you know, the name of the podcast is Let Go and Lead. And you certainly have been an example of that. What do you think leaders most need to let go of?
It's probably different for each leader, but for me and perhaps a lot of other leaders, it's letting go of our ego, you know, thinking that we've got the best ideas and that we know what the right decision is, thinking that, yeah, I'd say it's letting go of their ego. You know, I'm thinking a lot too of one of the things I'm really grateful for at Namaste Solar. We built a culture where people can give that FOH, that frank, open, and honest feedback to people in power. You know, when you're a founding CEO, you've got a lot of power in your company, and to expect someone to give you candid, good feedback if they're worried about the consequences, or they're worried about you potentially getting defensive, or you worried about you getting angry or upset about it, that's a tall order. I think I've gotten lots of healthy doses of humble pie throughout my time at Namaste Solar in a good way, because even though my first instinct was to be defensive or to deny it or to think, well, no, that's not true, or I disagree, just learning to shut up and listen and truly try to listen to the feedback that you're getting and letting go of your ego and all the things that your ego wants to say or that it wants to argue with has been so tremendously valuable for me. Maybe that's what I would say.
Well, thanks again, Blake. It's just been fantastic. This is Blake Jones, the co-founder and former CEO of Namaste Solar. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
What an incredible culture, story, and journey. I have four takeaways from my conversation with Blake. First, bring your team along on the journey. Instead of making decisions and pushing them down, invite others to participate in making the decisions together. As CEO, Blake spent significant time sharing, listening, getting input, and considering alternative ideas on Namaste Solar's business decisions and strategy. His time invested up front paid off in the ease of implementing any change. Second, be transparent on decision making. Make it clear who makes the decision and how the decision is made. At Namaste Solar, the team created a decision zone chart comprised of all decisions in the company. It's updated regularly, and anyone can reference it at any time. This practice drives transparency and helps build trust. Third, as a leader, invest your time in constant and continuous communication. Blake shared one of Namaste Solar's core values, FOH, frank, open, and honest communication. In practicing FOH, you avoid parking lot and water cooler conversations and address issues early and openly. Good communication is difficult and takes time, but there's a huge return on investment. Lastly, have the confidence in your organization and in yourself to know when it's time for you to make a change. I'm so inspired by Blake's personal journey, especially in his confidence and self-awareness. Thanks so much again to Blake for sharing his story with us. And thanks to you for being a part of our community. If you enjoy Let Go and Lead, I'm always grateful for your ratings and sharing of episodes with family members, colleagues, and friends. With gratitude, this is Let Go and Lead.